Welcome back to the Roundtable. The Women Against War Project Pathways to Peace is highly concerned about the proposed upcoming U.S.-North Korea meetings. North Korea expert Maude Easter joins us this morning to discuss the issues. She has served as Northeast Asia representative for the American Friends Service Committee based in Tokyo, traveled 8 times to South Korea, obtaining information to share with peace activists in the U.S. in support of the South Korean activists struggling on issues of human rights, labor rights, student rights, and environmental justice. She co-founded the Committee for a New Korea Policy, which provided education and advocacy on the U.S.-Korea relationship locally, statewide, and working with other advocates nationally. Currently, as a Women Against War activist, she is providing community education and advocacy in support of a U.S. diplomacy to establish a normalized non-aggression relationship with North Korea and to support North-South cooperation and reductions of military tension, including establishing a nuclear-free peninsula. It's a great pleasure to welcome Maude Easter back to the Roundtable. Good morning, Maude. How are you?
Fine. Thank you very much. Glad to have a chance to talk about Korea.
Very nice to have you with us. Before we get into the nitty-gritty here of what's going on right now, how did your interest in North Korea blossom?
Well, in 1975, when the Vietnam War ended, I was working for the American Friends Service Committee out in the Northwest in Portland, Oregon. And like other peace activists at that time, we'd been totally focused on Vietnam, but realized that the U.S. was up to other things in military and foreign policy around the world that we wanted to be more knowledgeable about. And I set up a study action group on U.S.-Korea relations, and very quickly we learned that the U.S. had been very instrumental in dividing the Korean Peninsula along with the Soviet Union. And at that moment, there were some U.S. generals calling for the U.S. to take a nuclear strike against North Korea. This was a kind of flexing our muscles response to the defeat in Vietnam. And that was very frightening. And we decided on a whole action campaign to educate the community about the need for a different response to North Korea, a need for support to South Koreans in their efforts at that point. This was 1975, to democratize. The U.S. at that point was supporting a very dictatorial government in the South and had no relationships with North Korea. And following on that, I got the opportunity to be with my husband, joint representatives of the American Friends Service Committee in Northeast Asia. And as you referred to, I made many trips to South Korea, but also in 1980 was able to be on the first non-sectarian U.S. delegation to go to North Korea. And that was the time that we could have made the deal that people are talking about now before North Korea even developed nuclear weapons. And that's exactly what the North Korean foreign minister whom we met with was asking for.
So where are we now? You see the North and South meeting, and that seems all to be good news, right?
Oh, yes, very good news. I think the leaders in both North and South Korea feel that it's very much in their interest to move ahead on non-aggression pact between the two countries as proposed by North Korea, as readily agreed to by South Korea. Their summit was a wonderful step forward. North Korea's leader took a big step on New Year's Day, calling for North Korean participation in the Olympics, calling for addressing military tensions on the peninsula with the South. And the South, who'd actually already said that they would welcome this kind of cooperation, immediately took the North up on that, and they have really made great progress. My hat is actually very much off to the president of South Korea, Moon. He has, at a time that the U.S. has sort of decimated its diplomatic force, we don't even have an ambassador in South Korea. We don't have Korean experts anymore in the State Department. Moon is the one whom I see kind of maneuvering these negotiations. getting North Korea on board, strategizing with North Korea about what's going to be necessary to get to a peace treaty with the U.S., I would say flattering Trump. He's made, he calls Trump frequently. He's signed on to this idea that Trump might get a Nobel if he, you know, moves forward cooperatively on renegotiating the relationship with North Korea. And Moon has been very wise about all the steps needed to get to an agreement.
So what are your concerns when it comes to the President of the United States meeting? And we've heard that there's, we don't know the exact details yet, but they're apparently very close to an agreement as to when and where to meet.
Right.
So what are your concerns about that meeting and how it can expose the fragility of the work that has been done up until this point?
Well, my major concern about the meeting would be wondering whether Trump realizes that negotiations, to be successful, have to involve wins, successes for both parties. He doesn't talk about negotiations that way. If you look at the way he has talked about the Iran agreement, it's as if only the U.S. should have benefited from the Iran agreement. The right. Iranians should not have benefited. I'm concerned that he may go into the negotiations with North Korea with the same mindset, not mindful of the history of the relationship, not mindful of the very solid reasons North Korea has for wanting a non-aggression pact from the U.S., not aware that the U.S., as well as North Korea, has taken moves in the past that undermined initiatives. So I hope somebody is educating Trump well for these negotiations. I'm certainly concerned that his two prime advisors on this, Bolton in the National Security Advisor role and Pompeo, now Secretary of State, have in the past called for military strikes on North Korea. Bolton went so far as to say when Trump first agreed to meet with Kim, well, that's good. They'll meet. The meeting is bound to fail, and then we'll be able to attack them. That's not a direct quote, but that was the essence
the gist,
of what he said,
yeah.
The gist of what he said. This is not propitious to reach an agreement.
So what about China?
Well,
where is China in all of this?
Yeah, North Korea just went to China.
Right.
And the South Korean President Moon has been in discussions with China. I think both parts of Korea realize that China's essential to making a deal. The Korean Peninsula has been buffeted in, for centuries between China and Japan. And over that period, Koreans have been rather good at balancing one off against another. I don't think they view China either in the North or in the South as totally a country they want to be totally dependent on. But they need China's support, and they the North is looking to China right now as a model for economic development. Both sides of Korea are thinking differently about their economic future. It was reported that Moon, the president of South Korea, sent Kim back to the North with a little computer program that showed all of the ideas they'd come up with in the South for how the economies could be brought together and developed with benefits to both North and South in a different way. I think the North's excited about that, and I think China would, as a major trading partner for both parts of Korea at this point, would be a key partner in that economic development.
Is there a chance still, do you believe? I mean, the president has gone back and forth on this so many times, and it's hard to know where we are and what the true meaning is here. But I mean, as late as a week ago, he was saying that the meeting may not even happen.
It's always hard to predict with this president what's going to happen. I'm particularly concerned about what he's going to say this afternoon at 2 o'clock when he's supposed
to
be.
Agreement.
Yeah. It's hard for me to see how North Korea could feel confident and trusting in the U.S. as a negotiating partner if Trump undermines the Iran agreement. The way Trump is undermining, has talked about leaving the Iran agreement is because he doesn't like that some issues he really cares about weren't part of the agreement. If North Korea has to expect that even if it negotiates an agreement, makes commitments, gets rid of its nuclear weapons, in the future, Trump is going to decide that because some other issue, their trade policies, their military equipment purchases, other kinds of military equipment, some other issue wasn't in the agreement, then the U.S. is going to back out of a Korea agreement. That's worrisome, and it's not. I hope that Trump stays in the Iran agreement. He should. But if he doesn't, I think it sends a very bad signal for the Korea negotiations.
And I'm not trying to be overly negative here, but it does seem that what we have right now, as of this moment, there seems to be the likelihood that he will back out of portions of it or part of it at least, and maybe not a full reneging of it, but at least a partial. And which just leads me to wonder that at 2 o'clock this afternoon, will we still really know what our policy is? Okay, well, what's next? What are we doing instead? Where are we here, and what are we going to do then?
Yeah, well, that's the point that European leaders have been making to Trump about the possibility that he'll withdraw from this agreement. They're pointing out that the Iran agreement has made considerable progress on the nuclear threat of nuclear weapons eventually from Iran, and that there isn't a plan B. And the same would be true of the situation in Korea. If the U.S. strikes a deal to denuclearize the peninsula and then tries to go back on it, there's not going to be a peaceful plan B.
This is I apologize if this is a naive question, but I don't quite understand. If the North and the South are able to meet in the way that they did over the last few months and have the depth of discussion that they did, why has that been, what happened to allow that? Why couldn't that have occurred a long time ago?
Well, at different points in the last few decades, the North and the South have met. It's the conclusion of the current president of South Korea that it's not enough just to get a non-aggression arrangement between North and South Korea or to get an improvement in their economic relations unless the real requirement is for the U.S.-North Korea tensions to be resolved. That has torpedoed the other moves toward lowering tensions on the peninsula. Moon also has a theory, which I think is very important to remember in this situation, that it's important to have speedy negotiations, particularly for South Korea and the U.S. that change presidents every 4 years. Several initiatives to lower tensions in the past have been torpedoed because they were developed by one U.S. or South Korean administration, took a long time to negotiate, and either the time ran out entirely before the deal was finalized, which happened to the Clinton negotiations, or the next administration has nixed what was done before, and all that ground is lost.
Well, the Women Against War Project Pathways to Peace is very important, and Maude Easter is an activist and expert on the subject, and we thank you very much for joining us and sharing with us this morning. We'll see what happens.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.